Lewis is saying, look, you're missing the point entirely. The reason why allegory is so rich and so incredibly rewarding is it helps us understand one thing in terms of another.
I'm William O'Flaherty from EssentialCSLewis.com. Thanks for joining me for another All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast. The show today is a reposting of a earlier essay chat. If you are not familiar with this, it's part of a series of special episodes I occasionally do where I talk with someone about a single essay from C.S. Lewis. The purpose is to introduce you to writings by him that you may not be familiar with and will want to read as a result of this podcast or reread because of being reminded about it. The essay today is The Vision of John Bunyan, and my guest is respected author Kevin Belmonte, who, among other things, have written several books related to G.K. Chesterton, someone who greatly influenced Lewis. My conversation with Kevin was recorded in 2012 and originally released in two parts. It was done that way because back then I thought the essay chat show should be not much more than 10-minute conversations. However, it soon became evident that for some essays it would be too limiting to do that. And for sake of convenience, when combining the 11th and 12th show, the program is just more than 20 minutes, so now it's a single episode for this reposting. I'll share more about Kevin at the end and remind you other shows he has been a podcast guest, and a link will be in the show notes about how to listen to that. I'll also remind you about where to get those show notes after the essay chat. Welcome back to the show, Kevin.
Thanks. Good to be with you again.
As always, let's first consider the background to this essay. Obviously, it's about John Bunyan. In fact, it's specifically about Pilgrim's Progress, his most famous book, and one of the best-known allegories. Again, the essay title is The Vision of John Bunyan. It was first published in The Listener on December 13, 1962. Now, getting a hold of the essay, if you don't already have it, may prove somewhat expensive. It first appeared in Selected Literary Essays, and that book is technically in print, but it's very costly. Last check I did, it was slightly over $40. Now, this actually was also a talk Lewis gave on the radio. It was broadcast a couple months before the date I just gave you, on October 16, 1962. It was broadcast over the BBC, and a recording is available. This is a fact that Kevin actually reminded me of. I'll share a couple more details about that, Kevin.
It's really remarkable that we have the recordings that we do have of Lewis's voice. We have not only The Four Loves, which is a real treasure, but also this particular essay, The Vision of John Bunyan. It's such a treat to hear Lewis himself reflect so richly and so memorably about this classic work. So to think that it survived despite the passage of 50 years now is a real treat, and I think it's something that is certainly well worth going to the Episcopal Media Center online and getting a copy of it, which you can do on CD, so you can hear Lewis reading in pristine digital audio.
Yes, and there will be a link in the show notes, but for those who are just listening to the audio, the website is episcopalmarketplace.org, and they can do a search for C.S. Lewis recordings. But again, if you're going to our website, you can just click on the link from there. Let's consider the essay here directly, starting off with Lewis starts the essay by acknowledging that the Pilgrim's Progress has been enjoyed by those who didn't want any of its teaching, and that the book itself isn't perfect. Tell us what Lewis found, he uses the word repellent and faulty, but why he wasn't ready to disregard the book altogether.
Well, I think there are two streams of thought to bear in mind as we go along here. One is the literary level upon which the book can be read and enjoyed. That's one of the two streams. But the second, certainly, and Lewis talks about this both at the beginning and the close of his essay, is the theological perspective that Bunyan brings to the table. And we have to remember that this was a time in British history where a civil war was being fought largely over religious issues. You had Catholic folk on one side taking up arms against Protestants on one side, but you also had various sects within the Protestant fold that were at loggerheads with each other. So, you know, it was an incredibly violent time, and Lewis points out that Bunyan himself had suffered great persecution. We must always remember that The Pilgrim's Progress was written because Bunyan was in prison. for 12 years, no less, as a prisoner of conscience because of his faith, that is to say, the particular sect of Christianity, Protestant Christianity, that he adhered to. He suffered for his faith, and he was slandered and deprived of the company of his family. So when he said harsh things, as he sometimes did against our Catholic friends, we have to remember that it was such a charged time, such a violent time in British history, where wounds that people had gone to war over were still very fresh and indeed being inflicted. So if Bunyan from time to time would inveigh against, say, the Pope or people within the Catholic fold, there was a reason for that contextually. And then there are other things. Many of us revere and, you know, just treasure the beauty of the Book of Common Prayer, for example. Bunyan wasn't terribly interested in that. He thought all kinds of formulaic prayers, anything that waxed of the liturgy, was anathema to him. It was a very reactionary stance given his particular theological perspective. And, of course, with the benefit of hindsight, we see the incredible richness that we can all experience through our friends within the Catholic faith tradition and within the Anglican Church, to be sure, through the Book of Common Prayer. We are so far distant from that deeply troubled time in history. So, contextually speaking, if Bunyan would kind of go down these theological trails, there was a reason for that. And of course, Lewis, being the champion of mere Christianity, would really not be sympathetic to those perspectives at all.
Now, at one point, Lewis comments about a critic who he believes misunderstood the nature of allegory. Describe what it was directed towards and the explanation that Lewis gives.
Right. Well, there are a lot of people, when they encounter an allegory, they go down a path that's not terribly fruitful in Lewis's mind. They try and figure out what the symbols are always pointing to in terms of our literal perception of reality. You know, types, figures, symbols. They're always trying to unravel that puzzle, or rather put the pieces of that kind of puzzle together. And Lewis is saying, look, you're missing the point entirely. The reason why allegory is so rich and so incredibly rewarding is it helps us understand one thing in terms of another, and he talks about humility. There are people who are saying, oh, well, this green valley is a symbol for humility, and they're constantly trying to pull you away from the richness of the allegory and sort of bring you back to reality. And Lewis is saying, look, you're missing the whole point here. It's completely opposite. You should understand humility in terms of that green valley and just enjoy the richness of the image and all the kinds of things that it brings to mind when you think of a green valley. If that helps foster your understanding of humility, then you've been given a great gift. So Lewis, he really understood the importance of what Bunyan achieved on an allegorical level. And he says that Bunyan himself is guilty of stepping away from the pure allegorical form. There are portions of the Pilgrim's Progress where you're basically getting a sermon straight up. And, you know, Lewis is saying, look, if you were to take those portions out of the Pilgrim's Progress, the book would not be diminished in any significant way. The richness of the book is the notion of a journey where you meet with many things that are delightful and many things that are dangerous, even harmful. I mean, that's the part of the universal aspect of the human condition that is so wonderfully realized in Bunyan's book.
Now, later in the essay, Lewis notes that there, I guess you might say, another type of misconception, that there are two things he suggests we must not say about the style of the Pilgrim Progress.
Right. Well, I mean, a lot of people have thought mistakenly that Bunyan was drawing extensively on the King James Version of the Bible. We have to remember that that was only just coming into use when Bunyan was being born, and certainly during the years that he grew up and actually dipped into the Bible. He probably looked at the Geneva Bible, which was an earlier version, much more than he did at the King James. And that's not to say he didn't know about it, perhaps even consulted. He did. But to say that the language of the Pilgrim's Progress is basically a paraphrase, if you will, of the King James is really rather misleading, because what you have with Bunyan is a rich tradition of spiritual reflection on the one hand, but then you also have, and Lewis says, such remnants of old wives' tales and chivalric romance from the kinds of chapbooks that he would have had access to. Chapbooks were small pamphlets, sort of Reader's Digest condensed versions of books. And we know, because Bunyan makes reference to them, that he knew two of those great sources of legend and myth, Beavis of Southampton, and then the Legends of St. George and the Dragon. And so when that wonderful moment of inspiration came for Bunyan, he wasn't busy lifting passages out of the King James Version. He was always interested in the idea of a spiritual quest, a spiritual journey that was a lifelong preoccupation with him. But then in prison, he was writing quite a different book, a book of a more devotional nature. He remembered those myths, that imaginative literature that had fired his imagination when he was a boy. Those legends of knights and chivalry and danger and fighting a foe and overcoming, all these kinds of things. And the two came together. And Lewis has this amazing phrase, and he was so adept at framing a phrase that would just really capture your attention, arrest your attention. Lewis said, you know, was it the fortunate limits of Bunyan's imagination that gave us this great masterpiece, The Pilgrim's Progress? And I think that Lewis is absolutely spot on there. And we can see through the life of someone that we may know a little better, Abraham Lincoln, that although Lincoln's opportunities for reading were very limited when he was a young man, you can probably count the books that we know he read for sure on one hand: Aesop's Fables, King James Bible, and The Pilgrim's Progress. But with Lincoln, when you think about things like the Gettysburg Address or his wonderful second inaugural address, the cadences, the rhythms, the beauty of the language that shaped those speeches from Lincoln, where did they come from? They came from his reading of Bunyan. So even though Lincoln, you know, reading list was very limited, he only had so many opportunities, about a year and a half of formal education, by all accounts. But because Lincoln was so steeped, he read, reread, memorized passages from books like The Pilgrim's Progress. Bunyan's language, the language that C.S. Lewis loved so well, shaped Lincoln's moral imagination and his literary sensibility. It helped give us the wonderful words from Lincoln that we treasure so well. Well, that same kind of dynamic was at play in Bunyan's life. He had quite a bit of education for the time, certainly for the son of a tinker who would have been a laborer and a small landholder or freeholder. Bunyan probably had a few years of schooling. We know that he picked up a smattering of Latin, a little bit of Greek perhaps into the bargain. He was able to read Luther's commentary on Galatians with profit, which means it's a pretty sophisticated book. So Bunyan had been pretty well educated for someone of his class and social standing. But that said, his opportunities to read, once he began to follow the trade of a tinker himself and serve in the army, his opportunities for reading the books he would have been able to afford were pretty limited. He also had copies of Fox's Book of Martyrs, so you can begin to see, although the books are limited, that would have fed into the writing of The Pilgrim's Progress. Lewis is absolutely right to say that there were fortunate limits to Bunyan's imagination. That is to say, there were only a few sources that really fed into The Pilgrim's Progress, but what wonderful sources they were.
Towards the end of the essay, Lewis admits that there is a, quote, unpleasant side to Bunyan's story. What is it, and why isn't he troubled by it?
Right. Well, you know, Bunyan suffered a great deal in terms of his own mindset. He wrestled with depression. He wrestled with all kinds of theological troubles. There are things about Bunyan's story that don't always translate well to our present. But Lewis had, and he mentions this in the essay, he said that when it came to the kinds of theological things that really are unsettling for people, Bunyan's ideas about Catholic believers, Bunyan's antipathy toward the Anglican Church, that kind of thing, he said, I suspect, or if it happens to mention, say, hellfire, as another example that Lewis talked about, he said, look, I suspect that we understand that when we read books from a long time ago, that this kind of language was pretty commonplace. That doesn't justify it, but most people accept that a lot of people who wrote a long time ago, and so when Lewis is writing about Pilgrim's Progress, it's the better part of 300 years before his own time. People understand when you pick up a book like that, there are going to be certain things that will be present there that you can just kind of look past and try and appreciate the true virtues of the book, of the things that really do endure, because these other things are really sort of time-bound. They're of their time, and they're no longer issues for so many of us, happily, in all of those cases. But then Lewis says something very interesting. When he talks about the images of hellfire, he says, you know, on an artistic level, leaving aside the theological end of things, on an artistic level, if the hellfires weren't as ever-present a danger, at least in the first part of the Pilgrim's Progress, when we have Christian's journey to the celestial city, the sense of danger and peril would be diminished. So something that theologically might be difficult to get around or have to confront, artistically, and I think you can just think about the fires of Mount Doom and say the Lord of the Rings to give you a more contemporary example. If those fires, if the threat of Sauron and the Lord of the Rings isn't there all the time, then the Lord of the Rings is diminished. So I think that kind of thing is going on with the Pilgrim's Progress and the kinds of perils of hellfire and the demon Apollyon that Christian has to confront. If those things are missing, then our artistic experience of the richness, the true adventure, the true salvation of the story is diminished, and I think Lewis is right to point that out, make a distinction there.
All right, again, this essay is called The Vision of John Bunyan. We encourage people to read it. There's other aspects that we are not getting into, and even the audio itself, when you get the audio version, it is slightly longer than the actual printed copy that we have from Selected Literary Essays. Transitioning now to the quotes, there are a range of things, I guess, that's possible. For me, I just picked out one quote, and it's at the risk of actually isolating it too much, but it actually kind of reminded me of some other things that Lewis wrote that I'll mention in terms of, you know, other related essays or even books. And at the very end, the last paragraph, he notes that the following, to be born is to be exposed to delights and miseries greater than imagination could have anticipated. And then he adds some stuff to that, but that's a quote that I picked out. What are a couple quotes that stood out especially to you, Kevin?
I was sort of silently saying, oh, you took the one that I was going to do, but no, you're absolutely right, William, to point to the last paragraph, the concluding paragraph of the essay. That I think is just a tremendous statement that gets to the universal aspects of the human experience. There's where Pilgrim's Progress, the idea of pilgrimage, the idea of adventure, the idea of life, holding all those things for us. I mean, that is something that is always true regardless of the time you live in. So you're quite right to shine a light on that passage. I do have one brief one. Lewis talks about the kind of light that you see in the Pilgrim's Progress. And at one point, he just gives us a tremendous sentence. He says, the light is sharp. It never comes through stained glass. And I think that gets to the very elemental sense that we find in the Pilgrim's Progress. Bunyan's language was the language of the English Midlands. It was a language nourished by country fact, as the biographer Ola Winslow says. It was so rich in imagery and speech patterns and folkways that Bunyan knew during his time in the 1600s. And it was such simple language. It was dealing with a very basic word stock or collection of words that most people would have known from that time. But Bunyan's gift, and we always must bear in mind that he was a craftsman as well as a wordsmith. And I like that bit of wordplay there, because Bunyan would spend time over the forge. He would hammer out metal. He would melt it. He would fashion it. He would shape it and make something beautiful and useful out of it. And he had that gift with the most basic words of the English language. And he's such a wonderful lesson in the whole notion of less is more. He would take these very basic words and just craft incredibly beautiful sentences. He had a style that was all his own, and a lot of people have said that his style would have been ruined, really, had he had more formal education. Some people, like Bunyan, are blessed with a cradle gift. If he was able to fashion metal and to shape it into beautiful and useful things, that skill set carried over. He was not only a metalsmith, he was a wordsmith. And that's where I think Lewis's one sentence, the light is sharp, it never comes through stained glass. It's not ornate, it's not flowery. Much as we love stained glass and appreciate it in its proper setting, With Bunyan, the light is sharp, it's elemental, it's simple, but it's incredibly rich. I'm rather fond of that sentence.
Finally, then, the last thing to consider is essays or even books. For me, I don't have the same background in terms of education. Mine's more in psychology and counseling. But and so the Mere Christianity material stands out a lot in my memory. In fact, the quote from the final part that I shared reminded me of parts in Mere Christianity and the last book where he talks about choice. So for me, that's a cross-reference, but we were talking beforehand. You shared with me some essays and books. Go ahead and let our listeners know what you found as great cross-references.
Sure. Well, I would be remiss if I didn't say that we shouldn't range too far afield from the wonderful collection of essays in which the vision of John Bunyan is included, and that's the Selected Literary Essays. I own a first edition from 69 that I picked up in a wonderful old bookshop not too far from where I live here in Maine, so I treasure that. But I would also be remiss if I didn't mention at the same time that Lewis, in his essay, The Vision of John Bunyan, mentions Roger Sherrock, his colleague at Oxford University, who is just revered as an editor of Bunyan's writings. And so if you have the chance to find Bunyan and Sherrock and to edit a book called Bunyan, Grace Abounding and the Pilgrim's Progress, both in one volume from Oxford University Press, that's a great read. And then last of all, just very briefly, I have a facsimile edition of the first edition of Pilgrim's Progress from 1678. It was published in the 1890s. It's not too hard to get through things like Advanced Book Exchange. If you really want to experience Bunyan's world, the world that Lewis visited and revisited time and again, that's a great way to do it. You can actually get a look and feel for the book when it first came out, and you can find that first edition facsimile through things like Advanced Book Exchange, and it's well worth the time and effort.
All right, well, great. Again, the essay we've been looking at is The Vision of John Bunyan. As Kevin just mentioned, Selected Literary Essays is the primary imprint resource that you can find that in. There was a larger collection of essays out of print, and I think it's also hard to find. Sometimes out of print books, there are used copies, but Selected Literary Essays would be your best source. We encourage people to read that, or in this case, again, the audio aspect is a possibility as well. Well, again, Kevin, thanks for being with me for this essay chat.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Again, I'm William O'Flaherty, the producer and host of All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast that is a feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this essay chat and will either read or reread The Vision of John Bunyan and other shorter works by Lewis. As noted in the program, this piece is best available in Selected Literary Essays. And I'm pleased to say, since recording with Kevin Belmonte in 2012, a paperback has been reissued and an ebook version is now available as well at a reasonable price. Check the show notes for a direct link. And don't forget about the audio version that is available. The link is in the show notes as well. You can find the show notes by visiting either EssentialCSLewis.com or AllAboutJack.podbean.com. The latter is where I have the audio files hosted, and it might be easier to browse past shows there as well. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N. As mentioned at the start, Kevin Belmonte is a respected author who has written on a variety of topics in addition to G.K. Chesterton. He has popular biographies published on William Wilberforce and D.L. Moody. In fact, I had a guest host interview him for that last book on D.L. Moody. I've included links in the show notes to several of Kevin's titles for your consideration for purchasing. Let me also mention that Kevin was on an earlier essay chat exploring an article by Lewis called Period Criticism. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider sharing it with others. Also, feel free to leave comments about the program online at EssentialCSLewis.com or at AllAboutJack.podbean.com. There you can also find previous shows where I typically do author interviews. Not long ago, I spoke with Dr. Jerry Root about an upcoming book he co-authored. It's entitled The Surprising Imagination of C.S. Lewis. I also spoke with Colin Duryea about his recent release, The Oxford Inklings. You can hear those and others by either going to EssentialCSLewis.com or allaboutjack.podbean.com. If you have questions or comments, email them to info@essentialcslewis.com. Again, that's info@essentialcslewis.com.